morning, and welcome to Sports Interview with Ann Liguori on this Saturday morning. How we doing? So glad you can join me where I am every Saturday morning right here on WLIW 88.3 FM Southampton, serving Eastern Long Island and Southern Connecticut, 96.9 in Western Suffolk, and streaming at wliw.org/radio and on your favorite streaming platforms. Each show is archived on my website at annliguori.com. and distributed via my podcast on Audio Boom and iTunes. Just back from 10 days in Ireland. Got a bad cold on my way home, so I apologize for my congestion and my nasal sounding voice. But nonetheless, I think you will enjoy these interviews that I will share with you this morning. I'm delighted to share an exclusive new interview I was able to get with the great Alex Lifeson, Hall of Fame guitarist for the band Rush. You know Alex Lifeson, all you Rush fans. Alex and I became friends through golf. I met him at Robbie Krieger's celebrity golf tournament in California, the Robbie Krieger of all people from the Doors. And Alex and I started talking about golf. Alex was just so nice, and I was so delighted he was so passionate about golf, and he plays as much as he can in between all his projects, which he'll talk about in this segment. So, I asked him to come on the show actually years ago in 2020, and that was about 6 months after Rush drummer Neil Peart passed away. And that interview made a lot of headlines in the music industry, including Rolling Stone magazine wrote about it, because it was the first time that Alex had actually spoken about Neil since Neil passed away. Alex sharing that he could not even pick up a guitar. He was just so sad that his dear friend and brother had passed. We then honored Alex Lifeson at my charity golf tournament out here on the East End of Long Island, which benefits cancer research, a couple years back. And Alex donated two guitars, which raised money for St. Jude. And it was just incredible to witness his generosity and the way he connected with our golfers and how much they adore him and the band Rush. Just three small town Canadian guys, Alex, Geddy Lee, Neil Peart, who followed their dream and made it big. So you will hear my interview with Alex Lifeson in this show. I will also share a conversation I had with former NFL star and Super Bowl winner, Joe Theismann. Now, Joe spent 12 years playing for the Washington Redskins, where he was a two-time Pro Bowler and led the team to consecutive Super Bowl appearances, winning Super Bowl 17 over the Miami Dolphins in 1983. Joe Theismann played college football for Notre Dame and was inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame back in 2003. Joe Theismann, every year for the past 35 years, plays in the American Century Celebrity Golf Championship at Edgewood Tahoe in Nevada. He is so passionate about golf, and at 75 years old, he plays as much golf as he can, and he still enjoys competing amongst the other celebrities in this annual tournament. Celebrities including Stephen Curry, Travis Kelce, his brother Jason, tennis star Marty Fish, who won the event in 2024. Hockey star Joe Pavelski, who won it this year. Steve Young, Annika Sorenstam, John Smoltz, Charles Barkley, just to name a very few of the celebrities who play. Joe Theismann is a motivational speaker and author, and I just love his energy. So I hope you enjoy these conversations with two giants in their fields, music and football, both guys addicted to golf. Up a copy of my book, Life on the Green, Lessons and Wisdom from Legends of Golf, heavily pressed, published it. You can get it at Barnes & Noble or order it online at Amazon.com. I'm really proud of this book. I interviewed 12 legends, 6 men, 6 women, 12 legends in golf, and they all share life lessons and wisdom, what they learned from their iconic golf careers that they use in their day-to-day life. So it's really universal themes for everyone. Whether you're a golfer or not, I think you will really enjoy the messages in this book. And they're positive, uplifting messages. Nothing negative, nothing divisive. This is a real feel-good book. These are messages that you can take with you in anything you do. And whether you're a man or a woman, whether you're young or old, these messages are reminders of what we can do to be better and to motivate ourselves and to live our best lives. Gary Player, 88 years young, talks about his passion and pursuing your passion no matter what age you are. Gary Player, who's won countless tournaments around the world, he continues to play golf every day. He works out, eats well, just has a real passion for life. So he talks about pursuing your passion no matter the age. Tom Watson, he shares the fact that picking mentors, really good mentors, are key to one's success. His mentors, when he was growing up, were Arnold Palmer, Jack Nicklaus, who he later played against and was rivals against, even though they remained very good friends, and Byron Nelson. Ben Crenshaw talks about destiny and having faith and belief. Renee Powell, as I mentioned, she's in the show. She talks about really overcoming all the odds and never let anybody else define you, which I think is a great message. Annika Sorenstam talks about the fact that there are no shortcuts to success. Work ethic is key. She also talks about the importance of having patience. Nancy Lopez talks about positivity. There are so many great messages in this book. I'm just so excited to share it with you. Life on the Green, Lessons in Wisdom from Legends of Golf. Favorite golf event to watch on TV takes place this coming week, actually, July 9th through the 13th. The American Century Championship, a celebrity golf tournament at Edgewood Tahoe Resort in Lake Tahoe, Nevada. And one of the regulars who plays every year is former NFL quarterback, winner of the 1982 Super Bowl with the Redskins, Joe Theismann.
Thanks, Ann. It's great to be with you.
So you've been doing this for what, 35 years?
I know. Half my life I've been trying to win this golf tournament. And what I found out is that there was a period of time where you could hit the ball really well and far. And then as time moves on, you know, Father Time's undefeated. So you just keep trying and trying and trying. And that's why I really enjoy watching the Champions Tour, because I can relate to those guys a little bit more than I can to the guys on the PGA Tour or DP Tour, because, you know, they just hit it so far. It's like this young guy that won the tournament this past weekend, 376. I mean, crazy. It's and in the fairway, that's the thing that, you know. I mean, a lot of people can hit it far, but I mean, these young players today are just unbelievable how far they can hit it.
So what do you average off the tee these days?
Probably 235, 240. Okay. I can get it out there pretty good. My bugaboo has always been my 5-foot putts, which I don't think I'm alone, to be perfectly honest with you. I think I'm in a pretty vast group of people who have trouble making those length putts, but that's something I work on right now. I can't quite get to the greens as easily as I could. Yeah, I'll give you an example. I played in I used to belong to Old Memorial down in Tampa.
Oh, sure.
We play a seniors member guest. Shortest par 4, 420. Shortest par 5, 535. We started playing these, and I'm saying, didn't somebody get the memo that this is called a senior member guest? You know, you've got to cut us a little bit of slack.
So. I know Chris Sullivan very well. When it first opened.
Yeah, Chris and Bob are very, very good friends.
So what was this tournament, the American Century Championship, what was it like when it first started 35 years ago?
It was bare bones compared to what we see now. We're expecting over 70,000, and I believe Saturday is sold out. For this tournament. American Century does such a great job. It's a great company. They give away 40% of their profits to the Stauer Institute for Research in Diseases. You know, the title sponsor is just incredible. But when we first started 36 years ago, there were about 50 people on the 17th hole, which has now become the signature hole, and about 10 boats in the water on Lake Tahoe. Now there's, you know, 60, 70 boats lined up and 10,000 people, which is really different. You know, golf is so different than any other sport we play for a couple reasons. Number one, you think of the other sports, hockey, tennis, football, basketball, baseball, they're all reactionary. And in golf, and you hit a shot and then your head gets to play games with you for the next 5 minutes as you walk or ride down the fairway.
So true.
And then you get to the ball and you've got all these things that you thought about over the last 5 minutes to totally confuse your next shot. And that is the big difference. And why I love golf so much, it is so much a mental game to stay focused on what you need to do and not have your head get involved. And that's why caddies are so important. I think to have a caddy who can sort of get you away from it a little bit mentally and then let you get ready for your shot.
And read your putt.
Gosh, yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Well, you know, don't you love it when you get some of these superstar athletes who have never played golf before and think, what could be so difficult about hitting a stationary ball?
It's right. It's not moving. It's not moving. And the other thing, too, is in this particular tournament, the American Century Tournament, which is so cool, most people at the club they belong to, most of the guys that are out there and gals, you know, a two-footer, it's a gimme. Just pick it up. Not in this tournament.
No way.
And that's really something the focus. You'd be surprised how many miss those little short putts.
I'm sure.
We play on Poana. So if you play in the morning, the leaves haven't started to really grow yet. You play later in the day, and all of a sudden that two-foot putt, if you don't hit it firmly, it's going to wiggle on you. If you miss the cup and you hit it firmly, you're going to have 3 feet coming back. There's the mental part of the game that you really have to deal with.
That's right. That's right. So what do you bring from your football career to golf?
Well, you know, as a quarterback, it's all about the load, the rotation, and the release. And I think in golf, it's pretty similar. You know, you take your setup, you want to be as stationary as you can. You know, Bob Toski was one of the greatest teachers of the game ever. He talked about the golf swing is a rotation around an axis. When people start swaying, bad things start happening. But if you can rotate around an axis and maintain your posture, you have a chance to make good contact. And that's really the one thing I've tried to work on more than anything is being a good contactor of the ball. If you make good contact, you've got a pretty good chance of decent things happening. If you're swaying and moving all over the place, good luck.
Did you take lessons when you started playing golf? And that's the problem, right?
That is the problem. I was preoccupied with that other sport. And actually, the other thing, too, is I had a chance to play professional baseball. I got drafted by the Twins. And baseball has always been a love of mine. And baseball simulates very well to golf.
Sure.
The hockey guys, the baseball players, all those guys really, you know, eye-hand coordination, keeping your head down, staying on the ball. Those are all things that they've done. You know, like I've said in golf, if they want to see what it's like to play football, hit a shot, pose for the shot, and let a 300 guy just knock you to the ground. And let's see how you handle the 18th hole by the time you get there after that.
Right. I know, especially mentally, right? You're seeing stars. Yes, golf, as you say, it's so much between the ears. So, yeah. I mean, could you bring anything from football to golf from a mental standpoint, do you think?
I think it's mental toughness. I think life is mental toughness.
Sure.
You know, I think you really have to be tough mentally to be able to deal with life, to deal with the ups and downs of the game. And, you know, the term cornerback, like the defensive backs, if somebody beats them, they have to forget that. You hit a bad shot, and this is the problem with the walk to the next shot, is you can't think about it. You have to focus on the shot that's at hand. And it's much harder to do than it is to say. And I think that's the biggest thing from a football standpoint is you throw an interception, something goes wrong, you have to forget about it. You just have to move on to the next play. It's the same thing with golf. You have to move on to the next shot. And then you really have to assess. As a quarterback, you're reading defenses. You're reading the defensive line. Is the nose tackle shaded? into a gap? Is the corner up on, is he pressing the wide receiver? Is he backing off? Is the safety someplace else? Well, on a golf course, you have to navigate, first of all, the lie. You know, what's the lie look like? Is it in the rough? Is it on the fairway? What club do I want to hit? How am I hitting that club that day? You know, sometimes in warmups, you know, I get a feel for how the game's going to go. Am I throwing the ball well or am I struggling a little bit? And that's part of the mental game you have to play to get ready. But there's very similar aspects to both games.
Lots to think about on the golf course. Was there
Way
that much to
much.
Think about as the quarterback? Probably in a different
way.
Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely.
I love the similarities. I love talking about the analogies between, you know, your chosen sport and golf. But hey, I'm looking at this list of celebrities, and there are a lot of football players on the celebrity list this year. You have Josh Allen, Marcus Allen, Jerome Bettis, Tim Brown, Sam Darnold, Larry Fitzgerald, Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Steve
gosh.
Young. Actually,
Yes. Steve.
I think I'm going to wind up playing with Steve on Friday. I
Oh,
might
he's
want to
great.
play with him. And
I
then, of course,
interviewed him years
the
ago.
Kelce brothers are there.
Jason Kelce, Travis Kelce. Do you think Taylor Swift will be there to root you guys on?
Gosh, I'll tell you something. It would be a madhouse if she was. It really would. I mean, you know, obviously at a football game, she's in, you know, in a box, and it's a little bit easier to control the situation. If she was on a course, I don't think you could control it. We would far exceed the amount of people that we would expect. And like I said, we're expecting 70,000 over the course. There's something else that we're doing this year, Ann, that's very interesting, is we've created a fantasy golf concept. If people go to AACFantasyGolf.com, what you can do is you can log on, and it's available now. We're broken down into five groups based upon our ability to play the game. You can choose one from each group, and if you win one day, you get two tickets to next year's tournament. Each day, you can change teams if you'd like. And if you win it all, you get a check for $10,000 to the charity of your choice, and you get tickets, two tickets to next year's tournament. But everything is fantasy now. You know, there's fantasy everywhere. So we've added that fantasy element. So it's accfantasygolf.com. You can log on and choose your team. Like I say, each day you can change if you like. And those are the prizes that are available.
I love that, the interactive part of that. Well, you have Stephon Curry. He won in 2023.
Right.
He's favored by the odds makers. And I remember he had the hole in one, right? In 2023, and then he made an eagle putt on the final hole. I mean, what a round of golf.
Unbelievable. And then Tim Brown had a hole in one last year. Marty Fish won it last year. Tony Romo will be there again. And Tony's won it before a couple times. There's a really solid group of people. I was on the range with Josh Allen a couple years ago, and there's a trailer at the end of the driving range about 320 out, and he was hitting it over it. It's like, you know, you got to be kidding me to wait, the way these guys play. It's amazing. It really is just talent. I mean, it carries over. Like I said, there's such an analogy between the mental aspect of what we did as a living and what they do. You know, John Smoltz has been a winner there before. John's going to be there. Vinny Del Negro. So we're represented in every aspect. One of my favorite people to hit balls next to and be around is Annika Sorenstam.
I love Annika.
Her swing is so sweet, so effortless. Me, it's like I'm driving a hammer. I'm trying to nail a hammer and drive a nail into a piece of wood. With her, it's just smooth as silk. And I love that tempo. That's why I love watching the LPGA tour.
Sure.
And I love playing in pro-ams with the ladies. I mean, they help you so much. Just they sort of slow things down. I guess the game of golf to so many of us in the beginning, it was at least, is the faster you swing, the harder you swing, the further the ball goes. That's not the case.
No way.
Not the case at all.
It's
Hideki
great to watch
Matsuyama.
Annika. She's
you know,
so
Hideki is another
smooth.
one, right?
Oh, Hideki.
It's slow and sweet. Yeah. Just a slow, sweet,
oh, right.
You know, swing like that. But Annika's like, you know, she's unbelievable. She really is.
I'm waiting for her to beat the guys. I mean, the greatest female
she's been
golfer.
Close.
Yeah,
she's been close.
She's been very close in some of the champs. She plays in some of these other celebrity events as well. Well, I know George Kittle, tight end for the San Francisco 49ers. It's the first time he's playing in this. And I read where he said his anxiety could not be any higher.
He's right. I mean, I remember even now, having played so many years, You step up on the first tee. I guess if you're not nervous, it means you don't care. That's just sort of my analogy. I know some people get up there and it says, "Oh, it doesn't bother you at all." I've been able to control my emotions a lot more, and you really want to hit a good tee shot. It's just like on tour. No matter what tour you're on, you just want to get off the first tee and sort of set the tempo what you hope will be a good day.
I always tell this story because Padraig Harrington is one of the 12 legends in my book, Life on the Green, Lessons
Right.
and Wisdom from Legends of Golf. And I want to talk to you about your book in a second. But he revealed in his chapter that he's not only nervous when he goes to the tee, he's fearful. Do you actually have fear? Can you relate to that, Joe Theismann?
Yeah, I can. Absolutely. I mean, you're afraid of what the results might be. I mean, you hone your skills, you practice, you spend hours trying to get ready, but then it's different when you're out front. It's the same thing when you step into a stadium. Padraig won this weekend on the Champions Tour. And he's playing some terrific golf right now. So is Stewart Cink. I mean, as you can tell, I love golf. I love every aspect of it. I love the mental part of it. I love watching the champion guys play. I love watching our tour guys play, just to see how they handle situations. I watch in the U.S. Open. I thought the rough was a little penal there, to be
Oh,
perfectly
to
honest
say
with
the
you. I mean,
least. And no
that's not a
fun.
test of golf. That's a test of survival. I mean, they could put that on survival, the show Survival, and it would be just as entertaining, to be honest with you.
It sounds like you're consumed by the game now, are you?
Yes. I'm not passionate. I'm obsessive. Absolutely. And my wife says the same thing. Can we talk about something else? Well, okay.
Golf has a tendency to do that. It's very addictive for sure. Well, what are your thoughts about, say, Keegan Bradley? Do you think he can be not only the captain of the U.S. Ryder Cup team, but be a player as well on the team?
I think he's got one of the toughest decisions we've seen in golf in a long time is, winning this tournament, the Travelers, he goes and wins that. And plays really, really well. It was a great comeback, by the way. Just stayed real. Talk about resiliency. Okay. Just stayed and hung and hung and hung. All of a sudden, he winds up winning it. And then now, all of a sudden, he has to choose a team. I don't know if there's ever been a captain that's actually played before. I'm not sure. You might.
Arnold Palmer back in the 60s, a long
Well,
time ago.
why not? I mean, we're looking at Shohei Ohtani do things that Babe Ruth did. Why not have, why not Keegan do what basically Arnold did? I would like to see him. I would like to see him play, but I think the responsibilities of the captain, you talk about the mental aspects of the game, and I really think that it would be a little much to play and focus, figure out how you're going to play, who you're going to play, and then how do you work with the other guys? I'd like to see it, but if I was a betting man, I'd say he's not going to play. I just think it would be a lot on his plate, and it wouldn't be fair to the other guys that are on the cup.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, a lot of people are saying his assistant captains, Jim Furyk being one of them, with so much Ryder Cup experience, could step in perhaps in the sessions that Keegan plays. But let's see. More to come on that story for sure, because
But
he
you don't
does so.
want it. But Andy, you don't want that. You don't want the assistant stepping in. If that was the case, then make Jim the captain. You know what I'm saying? I think the role that he has been chosen for is an honor, a great honor. He knows he can play, but now it's other guys' time to be able to play and lead them. Use your experience to lead them. Even though, I think back to the Super Bowl we won in 1982. None of us had ever been there before. There's an excitement that goes with it. There's this anticipation. I mean, you just get all geeked up to be able to get out and do it. And then in '83, when we went back, it was a little, well, we've been there before, a little bit different, and not quite as intense, I guess you could say, as we were in the first one. I think it's a little bit like that for Keegan. I'd like to see him just be the captain, to be honest with you.
Any football predictions for this season, Joe Theismann?
Don't count Kansas City out. I mean, just Travis is going to come back with a vengeance, to be honest with you. And the Eagles are just a tough one. Our Commanders scared the living daylights out of the Eagles last year. Detroit has two new coaches when you look at that division. Chicago with new coaches there. And of course, Pittsburgh with the newly minted quarterback, Aaron Rodgers, is there. And Aaron will be in the tournament as well. And I actually think Aaron's going to have a really good year. You know, when he was with the Jets over the last couple of years, he was, whether he had the title or not, he was the assistant general manager. He was making personnel decisions. He wanted this guy, he wanted that guy. Now he gets a chance to just go play football in Pittsburgh. And we'll get a chance to see, you know, how much gas is in the tank. I think
Well,
there's a lot.
do you think his age will be a factor at this point? I mean, guy's over 40 years old.
It's not anymore. I mean, you look at Tom and some of the other guys that have played into their 40s. You know, it's a different era. They take care of themselves. They have nutritionists. They have masseuses. They have exercise programs that keep them fit all year round, and they last longer. I mean, when I got hurt at 35, that was one of the older guys in the league. At 35, they couldn't get you out quick enough. Nowadays, you're 40, and you're probably going to sign as a backup. Excuse me, and wind up making $5, $6 million a year. You know, 1984, and I was the fourth highest paid player in the National Football League at $1 million a year.
Wow.
My, how times have changed. And then you look at the purses on tour. You look at the numbers now for everybody on tour, and the millionaires, they go into the hundreds now because of the purses that are available. And I feel this way. There's been a lot of water run under the bridge in my life, and I'm thankful for every opportunity I had. And I don't begrudge these young people one bit for getting everything they can and enjoying life and having the opportunity. If the resources are there to be able to earn them, go get them and good luck. That's the way I feel about it.
So you don't think there's too much money in golf these days? Those signature event, the purses are $20 million. These guys now are making so much money, Joe, based on really the PGA Tour's reaction to LIV Golf, to try to keep the guys to stay on the PGA Tour.
Yeah, isn't it funny that it took LIV Golf to get the purses where they are? They could have done it before. Probably would have kept some of the guys on tour. But you know, it, like I said, it is what it is now, and the demand, the viewing audience, the amount of people that watch, the amount of people that attend the events, I think it's driving it. And you know, the funny thing about the world of football, Ann, as an example, there's three things that I think drive football. Number one, the rabid fan. They absolutely have to be there. They love their team. They love their football team. Then you have fantasy football. If you're a fan of football, you know, but you're in the office, you may not be a fan, really, but hey, I have to participate anyway. And then you can't ignore the fact, the impact that gambling has in every game. People want to bet. Now they get to do it legally. So those are the things that drive the sports that we watch today. Is, you know, they get the excitement sitting there wondering, you know, are they going to go for it? Is it first down? Is he going to make the field goal? Is he not going to make the field goal? You know, are the bases are loaded? Are they going to get somebody home? 3-point shot, is he going to make it? Okay, are they going to knock it close enough to be able to get birdie on the 18? I mean, in hockey, is, you know, is the goalie going to be able to stop it? People want to get involved in that way.
Tell me what you're doing now. I know you have a book out and you do a lot of motivational speaking.
I do. I have an opportunity to do a lot of speaking, a lot of chances to be able to share stories with people. Now, I base it off the world of sports, the world of business, and our own lives. The book is called How to Be a Champion Every Day. And I think there's parallels between the three. Talk about goals, you have to have them. Talk about attitudes, you need the right one. Talk about customer service, which is really people relationships. And then, of course, teamwork is an integral part of it. And we all get motivated in a different way to go out and do the things we want to do. And when that opportunity presents itself, how do you seize the opportunity? My favorite word, opportunity. And it applies across life, it applies across business, and certainly applies in sports.
What a pleasure, Joe Theismann. Good luck at the American Century Championship, your 35th appearance. I want you to beat all those young guys, okay?
I'm going to do it, Ann. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I am in Toronto and very excited to see Coldplay in concert, but even more exciting is having dinner with the legendary Alex Lifeson, Hall of Fame guitarist for the band Rush, and so many other things that we hopefully will talk about. Hey, Alex.
Hi, Anne. It's great to see you again. It's been a couple of years, I think.
I know it has been a couple of years. What have you been up to since we honored you at our charity golf event in the Hamptons a couple of years ago? It's so great to reconnect with you.
I think when I saw you, we were just releasing an album for Envy of None, the first album, which went well. The experience was great. It was just a recording project for musicians getting together and making a record. It took us about a year to make that record, but it was a really satisfying experience working with, you know, different artists, particularly Maya Wynn, the singer, who was just absolutely amazing. We started the second record soon after the release of the first one, and we spent a little over a year working on that record too, which was released in March, and that's called Stygian Waves. That's the second record, and I think we really kind of developed into more of a band with that record. It wasn't so much just this project. There's just a unity in the material, the way the songs were developed. There's great variety. Each song is really quite different from the other, and I think the underlying connection is Maya's voice, which is absolutely spectacular, and her lyrics are wonderful. So for me, you know, coming at the end of the Rush experience in 2015, it was nice to get into something that I could really sink my teeth into and really do what I know how to do, rather than just sitting around trying to play golf, which I don't know how to do. I'm learning as I get older. But that was really, really a great experience doing that. I've been working on another project with a group of musicians for a documentary about the Great Lakes, and a very interesting kind of concept. And it was all jam based, and we had hours and hours and hours of material that we went through, and we've created some really beautiful sounding instrumental music on its way to, you know, becoming an album. Hopefully by the early fall that'll be done, and we're looking at possibly doing a couple of dates as well. Just very again, very spontaneous, improvisational kind of music, but it's just another dimension, you know. I feel like I've been reborn with all the music projects that I'm doing now, because it was really kind of quiet for me, and I was trying to find my way. And what am I going to do? Am I just going to be a part-time golfer for the rest of my years, or what? And this has thrust me right back into it, and I'm working on all these projects, and I'm playing a little less golf, and I don't know. I don't think that's such a bad thing. I mean, I'm still playing a couple times a week on average, so that's not too bad. But I could use a break. Golf's hard.
Golf is very, very hard, for sure. The last time you were on my show, Alex, on Talking Golf, Neil Peart had just passed. It was probably a couple months after that happened. And you were very sad, obviously. He was like a brother to you, and very open on the show, and said you just didn't have it in you to pick up the guitar.
Yeah, that's true. It's, you know, when Neil's daughter died in a car accident in 97, it was the same thing. You know, we shut it down, and I just had no interest in a lot of things, especially something like music, which is such a passionate, spiritual thing. When he passed 5 years ago, 5.5 years ago, it was the same thing. It really had no drive to play for about a year. And then I came out of it, and I find grieving, I've had so much experience at grieving now in my adult life, that I kind of have it sort of figured out. For me, I commit to a year of grief, and then it's time to move on. And you can still pay tribute to the person that you've lost, the memory. It's fewer tears and more smiles, I think, what happens after a period. And certainly that's the way, you know, we're always looking at some sort of tribute to Neil in our daily lives, Getty and I both. We, you know, Getty and I get together a lot. You know, we're really, really close friends. And we have not lost an iota of love for our lost brother. And we celebrate him as much as we can.
It must have felt so good to get back in the studio and to play, as you say, for that envy of none, and even jamming with Getty.
Oh, absolutely. Like I said, I mean, that's what I've grown up with. You know, Ged and I have been friends since we were 13. We were started the band when we were 15 years old, and that's been our whole life work. Neil was kind of done, you know, at the end of the tour. It's understandable. His job was way harder than ours. He played at 110%, like every gig. And he got to a point in his early 60s where physically playing a three-hour show at that intensity was becoming too difficult, and he would not accept 99.9%. It had to be 100 or 110 in his case. So that was understandable, but it was difficult for us, for Getty and I, to kind of accept that was it. We still had lots of gas in the tank. And I'm sure we talked about this way back then. But so we've always kind of lived with that for the last 10 years. So for me to get back into the studio, I just feel I'm where I belong. And it's a rebirth for me in a lot of ways. I just feel so excited with playing. And I'm playing a lot. And it feels good. My fingers feel good. I missed it. I missed that feeling. So I'm loving it.
Do you think you'll go out on tour at all? Do you think about it?
Oh, yeah, we think about all that stuff, but, you know, who knows? I've got my hands full with so many things right now, so I don't know about that in particular, but, you know, you never know where life is going to take you. That's what I've come to realize. Like, every day is a different day, and opportunities come and go, and you take some and you skip on some, and you just see whatever kind of fits, feels right at the time. So right now I got a whole bunch of right stuff, so I'm pretty happy with that.
And so how much golf can you play?
So, you know, I was typically playing three or four times a week. And, you know, a couple of years ago, I was usually five. You know, when we had our place in the country, I was playing 5 days a week, easily 5 days a week. I'm playing probably on average, two or three days. I mean, this month is pretty filled up with golf. Last month, hardly any at all. And August is starting to fill up. So I'm sure I'll get to my, you know, three-round, four-round quota. But, you know, as we were talking many times, golf is such a very, very difficult sport. There's so many things that are counterintuitive about it, so much stuff to remember, so much of it is getting out of the way of it, and so much of it is you absolutely can't help yourself to get in the way of it. You know, I was saying to you, on the range, I'm easily a 2-3 handicap on the range. I can pick targets. I can hit to those targets. I don't have, you know, I'm 71. I don't have the same length that I had. But I get on the first tee, and I'm a basket case, like, over and over and over without fail. It's such an infuriating game.
Can you bring anything from music to golf?
Well, you know, the tempo is, I hear this from everybody I play with. Oh, you're a musician. You know everything about tempo. Why don't you have great tempo? And I think about that all the time, and I'm not quite sure what great tempo is. I get the concept of what it is, and often, you know, my swing, I'm told, you have beautiful tempo. It's nice and smooth and easy. I'm swinging as hard as I can, like... I'm not even thinking about tempo, but I understand it. And if you want to get your hips to move, if you want to get your shoulders to turn, you have to have the right tempo. If it's too fast, things are out of sequence. The hands are too quick. Casting, major problem for me. But I don't know where that spot is between too slow and smooth. You know, the difference between fast and hard. Because you want to hit the golf ball hard, but you don't want to be too fast. It is an unbelievable game.
It keeps you out there, right? The challenge keeps you going.
I know. And that's the other thing. How many times you come down 18 and you have the best hole of the round? on 18, because they know they want to get you back out on the golf course soon.
Favorite golf memory? What would you say?
Oh, geez, I've had so many. You know, I've played with Rocco Mediate so many times. I had him up to Coppinwood, the club that I was a member at for, he was there for four of our member guests, and it was just awesome. He's such a personable guy. Everybody absolutely adored him, and he made himself available to everybody like he always does. He's a remarkable guy. I've had some great rounds with Lee Jansen and Mark Calcavecchia. I heard from Mark the other day. We stay in touch. We keep threatening to get together sometime soon, and I would like to do that. So, like, you know, I have those memories from that other generation of golfers. You know, I had Dave Hampstead. He's a local comedian here. I brought him down to your tournament a couple of years ago, and I played with Dave a lot. And he's a really good golfer. You've seen him play, and but he's also so funny. So I don't know. Some holes I'm crying so hard from laughing that I can't even swing the club. So I you know what? Every game is a memorable game except for the ones that aren't. You know what I mean?
I love that quote. Can we use that one?
Sure.
Well, I know you golf in Ireland and probably Scotland. And do you like links golf?
Yeah, I love it, especially over there where it's the true links. You know, you have that experience here and there. On this side of the ocean, some courses that make themselves like that and some that are naturally like that. But over there, there's a plethora of those sort of linksy courses, and they all have very individual characters. We were talking about the Island course just outside of Dublin. Wow, is that is truly links, like right to the core. And it's just such a visually enchanting setting to be playing in Royal County Down. We played there on a very gray, misty day, and it was magical. Honestly, magical. There was fog in up on the mountain, and the green and the course was so green and purple, and the heather, and it was just stunning. And that's what golf provides for you, just this incredible environment to chase that little ball around in.
It really does. The scenic beauty of the golf courses, one's more beautiful than the next. Now, you and I met a number of years ago at Robbie Krieger's celebrity tournament. So I'm going to ask you if you could put together a foursome of, say, some of your closest musician friends, who would it be?
Oh, okay. So I have to think about that one. I played with Alice a lot, and Alice is great. He's a great golf partner. He's a very fascinating guy. Has great stories, and he's quite talented as a golfer. You know how important golf is to him, to his whole life. I'd probably get Alice in there, and Robbie. Robbie's a king. I love Robbie so much. He's we've become really, really good friends, and I never expected that to happen. You know, you meet people and you have a nice time together and you sort of move on, but we've stayed in touch. I go out and I play at his events whenever I can. It's, you know, always for a good cause, for St. Jude's, among other things, and then we jam, and he gets me to jam with other people. He took me out the last time I was there. We went out a couple of nights, just on off nights, and he took me to clubs where people were playing, and we got up on stage and jammed with them. I mean, I don't really do stuff like that so much, but he kind of forced me into doing it, and I loved it. And and we play together, and I'm looking at him. You know, I grew up with the Doors, so I'm looking at the guitar player of the Doors. And I'm like, oh, this is awesome, standing beside the guitar player of the Doors. We're playing guitar together. So that's a magical thing. So he would definitely be the third. And then the fourth, who would be the fourth? Tom Cochran. Tom Cochran is a Canadian artist. Life is a Highway. It was his big, well, one of his big hits, but probably the biggest one that your audience would recognize. Tom and I play a lot. We do a trip to Arizona every February. We play Whisper Rock and Estancia and Silver Leaf. We're there for a week together. We get together here locally and play a little bit over the summer. But he's a great golfer and also a great storyteller. So that would be a really awesome foursome.
That would be a fabulous foursome. Can I tag along? Can I caddy? Now, you're a golfer in addition to obviously one of the top guitarists in the world, a producer, a pilot, a painter. How would you rank these activities, would you say, in terms of passion?
Well, I think I'm passionate about all of them when I do them. I was doing paintings annually for the Kidney Foundation here in Canada. And they had a program where they got celebrities to do paintings. And it started out as a very basic thing. They send you a small little, not a canvas, really a board, and a little platelet of color paints, of acrylic paints, and you know, a couple of brushes. So the first year I did that, and I thought, screw this. I went out and I spent thousands of dollars buying paints, and I got every shade of every color. I got the best brush. Like, I really did a number. I got proper canvases, and I started taking it much more seriously. Every time I do it, and I spend, 4 to 6 weeks on a piece, every time I do it, I just feel so gratified that I did it. And I don't know why I don't do it more regularly. Like, life gets in the way of some things, and painting for me is one of the things. I would do a lot more of it, and I hope to eventually. Flying, I don't do very much flying anymore. I always believe that you have to be proficient in flying. You can't just be a fair weather flyer if you're going to be serious about it. It's very easy to kill yourself in an airplane. I was gung-ho for probably the first few decades after I got my license in 1980. And I flew, and on the road, I used to take crew guys flying. But because I traveled so much, I never bothered getting an airplane. So I didn't make that commitment in that way. So I enjoyed the whole flying experience, the whole pilot experience. But I guess I'm just not quite so passionate about that anymore.
So guitarist, golfer, painting, would that be the order?
I would say so, yeah, yeah.
See, I know you, Alex Lifeson. All right, so talk about getting into the ale business. I love those social media spots I'm seeing. There's one that's a non-alcoholic beer that you and Getty did this little spot on. It's called Your Turn to Drive. Yeah. That was hysterical.
So the brewery is Henderson Brewery. They're here in Toronto. They're a boutique brewery, and they make a lot of products, and they're all really good. The quality is so excellent, and they're wonderful to work with. A few years ago, it was during COVID, there was the thought about maybe having our own beer, and so we got together. Ged and I sampled about 25 beers, I think, porters, ales, lagers, the whole gamut, and we settled on three, and of those three, the final one was the Canadian ale. It's delicious. It's done really, really well. But the fun thing is we decided to do these ads for our beer products, and they're like off the cuff. We don't rehearse them. We don't write them out. We just do a bunch of scenes, and we goof around and joke around, and they've become so popular. I mean, it's like a new age in advertising that we've sort of latched onto. But the one that we did recently for the non-alcoholic beer is a particularly funny one. Yeah, they're all really, really kind of funny and fun.
And they're just off the cuff, right? You just make it up as you go.
Yeah, we pick a date. We go to the brewery and, there's a couple of cameras and some lights. And what are we doing? Okay, this is for this. Okay, let's do that. And then we just throw out a bunch of ideas and there's a little bit of editing involved. But they're really a lot of fun to do.
And you have a mustard too, the Rush Golden Ale Mustard.
Oh, yeah, the mustard. The Sluska's, the mustard is fantastic. It's made with our beer. It's really, really delicious.
I can't wait to try that too. I'm seeing all this stuff you've done. Okay, look, final two questions. Of all the songs you wrote or co-wrote, Alex, I know it's like picking your favorite kid, which is impossible. What one would you say is most meaningful to you?
It is like picking a child. But I would say if I had to pick one song, it would be the last song on the last record, which was The Garden. And it's a very poignant song. I think that song really meant a lot to Neil, and it was ironic that, you know, he became ill, and a lot of the things that he touched on in The Garden were very connected to his illness and his death. So that one always sticks with both of us deep down.
I mean, Working Man, Anthem, In the Mood, The Spirit of Radio, there's just so many.
Yeah, there's lots of them.
What is out there that you yet have to do, that anything in your mind that you just haven't tried yet that you just have to do?
I don't know if I feel like I'm lacking anything in my life. I have a fantastic family. My grandkids are grown up now, and you know, one's in college, and the other one's got his own business, and I just celebrated my 50th anniversary a few months ago. You know, I'm playing guitar for 3 hours a day. There's a good balance in my life. I don't feel like I'm missing anything. I think my bucket's pretty empty, I have to admit, and it's a good feeling because I feel energized and I feel like there's so much ahead of me. And some of it is the same old stuff, and some of it's a little different, but it's the activity that counts. It's the propulsion, the movement forward that life is all about.
Any holes in ones?
I have one hole in one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then you've done it all.
I have done it all.
Alex Lifeson, thank you so much. What a pleasure to reconnect. Really enjoyed our time together.
Yeah, I love seeing you, Anne. It's great to see you.
Thank you. Hope you enjoyed this edition of Sports Interview with Anne Liguori, and be sure to pick up a copy of my book, Life on the Green: Lessons and Wisdom from Legends of Golf. Heatherly Press published it. You can get it at Barnes and Noble or order it online at Amazon.com. I'm really proud of this book. I interviewed 12 legends, 6 men, 6 women, 12 legends in golf, and they all share life lessons and wisdom, what they learned from their iconic golf careers that they use in their day-to-day life.
My thanks to Alex Lifeson of Rush and to former NFL star Joe Theismann and to Mike Goodsell in production. As someone once said, and I love this quote, "Whether you think you can or think you can't, you're right." Have a great week. Be well, be kind, and I look forward to talking with you next time. Hopefully with my voice back, right here on Sports Interview with Anne Liguori.